We kick off hour number three of the program right here live from the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. It is Three and Out. Nate Hodges, Houston Kress, Billy Williford with you. This segment of the program is brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union, celebrating 85 years right here in East Tennessee, and May is the month for home loans. So check them out online at tvacreditunion.com. Walk into one of the many branches around, over 20 to serve you. I'll see a new one I haven't even noticed around when I'm in different parts of town. So you can find the location nearest you at tvacreditunion.com. You can check in on the home loans. They've got great specials there for the month of May as they celebrate 85 years all this year. It's the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union, helping their members grow financially, moving upward and forward. Apparently, Jeremy Pruitt wasn't...
Probably a 1-over-1 slope, if I had to guess.
Upward and forward?
Just a...
Yeah.
45 degrees.
The way it looks in the logo, So...
Yeah.
The branding all. You know, it all ties together.
Just using slope. Bringing that one back from high school. How about that?
Probably had a good math teacher for that. If I had to guess...
I think I had a few, as I recall.
Yeah.
I don't know what you just did. I lost audio in an ear. Still not back. Quit messing with that, maybe. Jeremy Pruitt was mad. Maybe he's still mad. I think he's still mad.
Yeah. I think he's a little perturbed.
I think you're right.
With some of the buy-in. I mean, I think it's better. I think it's getting better, but it seemed like he was still a little upset that, 30 players went home for the mini term in
30,
the summer.
Yeah, 30 scholarship guys.
Yeah.
So he said 55 players stayed for mini term over the summer. Then we've got, this is his quote now, then we've got several guys that are here doing rehab. I think our guys are excited about getting going. I mean, me personally, when I look at it, I don't know why you'd want to go home. That's like, so Jeremy Pruitt, it hurts, right? You want to go home?
Yeah.
But we're here to play football. Nothing against going home. But heck, we went home during the bowl season. Good line there.
Yeah, that's good line. That's kind of a good shot at your own team.
We went home during spring break. We've had enough breaks. We need to get to work. It's like, oh, you want to go spend time with your family? You want to go to the beach? You want to go on vacation? You're running laps when you get back. Oh, you want to have fun during the summer?
I'll get 25 new ones.
We went 5-7, bro. You better get on that line. Because you're running suicides. Jeremy Pruitt was asked in a recent interview what he did this offseason and how he kind of used, especially not being in a bowl and having no bowl prep or anything like that. And here's what he said. It gave me an opportunity to kind of self-assess and go back and look at all the things, looking out the entire year from January all the way through December, to figure out some things that we did like and some things that we would like to change. It gave us an opportunity to recruit, to finish out a class, and start on the next class. So it probably gave us a head start for the next two classes. He's trying to find the positives. But something that you definitely don't want to get used to. He says, I really don't need to unplug. I grew up in this business. My dad's always been a coach. It never leaves you. You're always at it. Whenever you've got a Saturday or a Sunday off, you're always still thinking about your players. You're thinking about a way to improve. But you can do that and still spend time with your family and enjoy yourself. I mean, I play golf occasionally, but I don't look at that as unwinding. I look at it as a chance to go compete against some of my friends. That's so great. It's like, yeah, when I play golf, it's not for fun. I'm trying to win again. He did say it was nice to spend more time with his wife and his kids during the holidays because he rarely gets to do that when he's at places like Alabama, Georgia, and Florida, but that he doesn't want to get used to it. He said over Christmas break, holiday break, when he was with his family, he spent much of his time doing the things he thought his rivals wouldn't have a chance to do, turning the disappointment into an opportunity. And that's when he went on to talk about how he reassessed. We've heard him say a few things so far. He's kind of reassessed his leadership style, wants to spend more time with the players, more time in a way, I guess, motivating them, getting them to buy in, selling the vision, and... I think the fact that 30 guys decided to go home for mini term has him a little perturbed. Seems like as a coach, you might kind of make that known up front.
Yeah.
say, hey, I expect you guys to be in mini-term. We need to all be here on campus together, getting to know each other, working to get better, studying, so on and so forth. Is he a good balance of this, or is he too much of this? Is he too work, never stop, football, gotta do it, run, or do we think he's... I mean, he himself is probably way too much of that.
Yeah, I don't...
But is this something that, like, long-term can burn players out? Or is that a, we're going to recruit the type of players that it doesn't get them burned out?
I think I would rather err with a guy like this. I think I would rather have...
Well, when the last coach, we did football 2 days a week,
yeah, it was the
too.
Opposite.
Now we're doing it two times a day.
I mean, I think I'd love to have a Dabo Swinney type, which seems to... He seems to run the perfect balance of, like, having a ton of fun, but also working hard enough so that on game day, his kids execute perfectly and don't make mistakes.
Right.
And make the big play in the big moment because they're not pressing. I mean, obviously... You want that to be the case in any program, but if you have to pick one, I don't know. What golf is a good example. What type of golfer are you? Like when I'm a grinder personality. Like to do better at something, like I have to work at it. I'm not naturally gifted really at anything, but I feel like if I put some time into it, I can get to being at least halfway decent pretty quickly, but I have to put in the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was like that as a college athlete. Like when I worked my ass off, I was pretty good. When I didn't, I wasn't. I had a friend who was almost the opposite. He was on the team with me. When he pressed too much, he just could fall apart. Like he had to stay loose and stay and like not overwork himself. And there's one like summer where he took a lot of time off and he came back and played the best season ever after that. Like when I play golf if I get put in a pressure situation, I can actually bear down, really focus, and I usually play better, at least for a short period of time, whereas some people they need to stay loose and stay relaxed and not put too much pressure on themselves. I mean, Pruitt's obviously the grinder type.
Yeah.
And I think with college football and all that goes into it, if I have to pick one or the other, I would prefer the grinder. But obviously, if you can have somebody who does that, but then gets the players to play,
right? And I think that's the key. I think him being this type of mentality, this driven, you know, forward football guy is good. I think that's the right thing. I think it is important though, as you manage a team, to realize that not every player is going to be wired the same way. There are a lot of players who, like you, when the pressure's on, they can bear down and push through it. And then there are other players who kind of disappear when the lights are biggest, right? When they mm-hmm. feel pressure and eyeballs on them and the stakes are high, you know, pushing a player too far one direction or the other can be a negative thing. So it's just a matter of, yes, you're that guy, but how you manage individuals on the team does need to vary. That's just the way it goes. Like I've told this story before, but I think it's pretty fitting. There are certain players who the more you give them, the better they are. And certain players, if you cut some things in half, they're better. Jonathan Crompton, I think, was the prime example. Reading the entire field in Tennessee's offense starting in 2009 under Lane Kiffin was too much for him. He was not good. They realized that by kind of picking out before the snap where your advantages were offensively and cutting the field in half
mm-hmm.
helped him make better and quicker decisions, because instead of worrying about five reads, he could focus on two or three, and he had the arm talent and he had the accuracy and he had the playmakers to make those throws and make things happen. Remember, they started rolling him out a lot. A, he's mobile, so that works out. But B, when you roll out, you're cutting the field in half. And I think everyone remembers the Georgia game that year where Tennessee just stomps a really good Georgia team.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times they rolled him out of all his throws. It had to be over 50%. They would roll him out to the right. The protection was good, and he's just sitting back there delivering absolute strikes to the sideline, to the seam route, to the dragging tight end, and it worked. And they found this out because Coach Summit actually went to Lane Kiffin and said, read these two player personality profiles and tell me what you think. And he read one, and it was not Jonathan Crompton. And then he read the next one, and he just said, I don't know what player this is, but this describes Jonathan Crompton. He said, that's Nicky Anasicki's page. The first one was Candace Parker. I can say whatever I want to Candace Parker. I can do whatever I want to Candace Parker. I can coach her. I can ride her hard. I can ridicule her. I can whatever. She takes all of that and uses it as fuel. Other players, you have to just coach them a different way. You have to give them more digestible things, more focused things to kind of work on. And in some cases, simplifying their role is the way to get the most out of them. Then they use that information, cut the field in half for Crompton, and boom. He wasn't an elite SEC quarterback that year, but he was much better than he had been the year before and for the first few games of that season. It was just like in the two-minute drill against Auburn, when he has to go quick and just make quick decisions, he's better. But when he sits back and has to read everything and there's time, like sometimes less is more.
Yeah.
And for Pruitt, I'm hoping that, because when you inherit a team, you're inevitably going to inherit players who do not have or share your mindset or your drive. And even when you recruit really good players, the same type of thing happens. The key for him is going to be recognizing who responds best to what. There are probably players in that 30 that went home that are going to be better because they went home and got to recharge and got to relax and kind of step away from football for a month or so. And there are probably going to be some in that 30 who could have really used the time. And I guess as we move forward, it's going to be up to Pruitt to understand who needs what, who fits best where, and then where they are, how much do I need to either rein them in or, you know, the opposite.
Now, I've got one more analogy we'll share on the flip side. Stick with us as we talk Tennessee football right here on 3 and Out. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. It is 3 and Out as we roll on hour number 3. If you missed any portion of the show, check out the podcast from hours 1 and 2. As always, subscribe on iTunes, and you can get those directly to your device. Really, all the shows here at Fox Sports Knoxville. And, we're on SoundCloud, Stitcher, all that good stuff as well, depending on where you prefer to listen. Shouts out to our podcast listeners whenever you listen to this episode. So, one other analogy for you, Houston. Talking about this Jeremy Pruitt personality thing. When you come into a situation that needs a rebuild, when you come into a situation where things have been a mess, don't you have to err on the kind of mean side of it with the players?
Yeah.
Like, when you're a first-year teacher, the advice that I've heard people give is don't smile until Christmas. Like, just be as mean as possible to your students, because that sets the standard, that sets the expectation. Because Butch Jones seemed like that teacher who the first day of school is like, hey guys, I'm the cool teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk in class and get up and sit wherever you want. And everybody, most students walk in the first day, and if that's the case, they're like, oh, this is gonna be awesome. This class is going to be easy. No problem. And then, like, a couple exams in, when you, like, don't understand what the hell is going on with the actual material, and you realize, you know, I really did need to know this stuff kind of for my next class and for eventually what I want to do in life, and I can't even learn it in this chaotic environment that's supposed to be fun, but it's really not fun now that I really think about it. And then you end up just failing at everything, which is kind of what happened here. Like, I feel like Jeremy Pruitt, if you're gonna err on the side of coming in and you know, being the sheriff and just, all right, here's the way it has to be done, this is the way we do things. And I don't think it's a stick. I don't think he's erring on that at all. I think it's just the way he is. But when you're coming off a coach like Butch Jones, that's probably the type of coach you need to hire. You can always loosen up later. You can rarely tighten things up once
you've lost it.
Once you've been too easy on the standards and the accountability. because how you handle that, how you handle your program is going to attract your next crop of players too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like we saw that with the basketball recruiting when guys come on a
visit.
Well,
you saw the opposite in football recruiting.
Exactly.
Yeah, went the other way.
You end up getting players who roll in
thinking one thing, getting another, and then they're disappointed and leave.
Right. So, I think it's good. I think it's fine. I think, you know, Pruitt, I don't know if Pruitt needs to be calling out players that went home for mini term, but I mean, that's,
I get that, but also I just think this, it's his program. He's trying to kind of set the expectation, and I think he basically is saying, look, it's kind of what we talked about, right, with the scholarship thing. It's like, you're here for football.
Yeah.
Like, the reason you're not paying for school is football. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that we all take that seriously. For me, obviously, to keep my job, we have to be better. And for you to keep your scholarship and to get as far in the world of football as you possibly can, you need to be as good at it as you possibly can be. And in Jeremy Pruitt's mind, that many players going home is not helping them or his entire team get better. I understand the setting of the expectation. I think he probably should have done it preemptively, but it is what it is. And I think as he continues to recruit, you're going to see a lot more of that type of mindset as this team and roster kind of turn over into, you know, now it's about half Jeremy Pruitt's. When it's three quarters and all of Jeremy Pruitt's players, I think you're going to see a very different approach top to bottom to the game of football. I mean, Jonathan Kongbo said it. Like, yeah, the approach to the actual game itself under Butch Jones was 2-3 days a week. Now with Jeremy Pruitt, we're doing 2 sessions of football a day on field and or training, and then the classroom type setting. It clearly is a drastic change for anybody who was here before and is still here under Jeremy Pruitt. And I think what Pruitt is trying to weed out is anybody who kind of prefers the old way and doesn't want to invest and dig in mm-hmm. to football now. Not even as much as he does, because I don't know if anybody could do that, but to a level that he views as efficient or sufficient and efficient, really. So this is him trying to set expectations for the culture and for the approach to the game. And I think that's exactly what he's supposed to do, because I'm with you. Like, when things, you know, in 2 years, if he's still here and he's got his entire roster and the approach is the same, he can lack back off a little bit and say, hey, you guys have been working hard. You do deserve a break. But right now, and he said it in that interview, we're not good enough to deserve extra breaks. We're not good enough to deserve extra time away from football. You know, we didn't go to a bowl, which means we didn't get those 15 practices. Like, we already got our break. We don't need more breaks. We need more football if we're going to be better at football. So I completely get where he's coming from, and I think this is just, I mean, I don't think he, like, railed anybody. It's not like he read the names of the 30 guys who went home. But I think this is a message to recruits, and I think it's a message to his team that, hey, this last year is unacceptable. I'm glad that I got to spend more time with my family during the holidays. I've never really been able to do that before. And that's because everywhere else I've been, we've been successful enough to not go home during the holidays. And that's the goal here.
Yeah, I think the point he was actually making was that how many of the guys actually stayed on campus and had balled in. So that, I mean, that's a good thing.
I don't know what the normal number is. I mean, right. I'm sure if you're Jeremy Pruitt, you want all 85 there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what it was, say, the year before, or so on and so forth. But yeah, again, I just think that if he had his druthers, it'd be every single person stays, goes to mini term, passes. And meanwhile, they're getting some extra workout in the facility. They're kind of bonding as teammates and coaches and staff, and it all just kind of melds together. Because that, to him, was a big issue last year. And one of the reasons he thought they kind of floundered down the stretch was because the buyout, the brotherhood kind of started to fail when things weren't going perfectly. He's at least we're seeing him make some changes and admit to, I don't know if I call them failures, but areas where he wants to do something differently. To at least see if he gets a different result. Like, he's trying to fix it. We saw him do that with the coaching hires. We saw him do that now with his approach to the offseason. And hopefully we'll see it with, you know, once fall camp starts and how he handles maybe some position groups, so on and so forth. We talked about the bouncing around of all the offensive linemen last year, I think it ended up really hurting Tennessee, especially because they were all just kind of in this meh soup.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would have been better off if they'd have just said, well, you're about as good as guard as you are at tackle or center or whatever, so we're just going to make a decision now, and you're a guard, and you're a tackle, and that's where you're going to be. Instead of this, well, maybe he could be better there. Well, maybe he's better. They just need to pick it and go.
Yeah, it makes sense. The quarterback for Tennessee, Jarrett Guarantano, I mean, he's always been a guy I feel like that at least puts in the time. It'll be interesting to see with a new offensive coordinator how he can improve or not. He is going to be one of the attendees at the 2019 Manning Passing Academy. We'll tell you what.
I think he was there last year too.
He was. We'll tell you what other quarterbacks are going to be there. And start to bounce around a little bit on the flip side. Stick with us right here. Hour three of Three and Out continues next. This segment of the program brought to you by Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. As always, you can work out absolutely free and try out Gold's Gym before you join with the free 3-day VIP pass at goldsgym.com. You can also find the location nearest you right there on the website as well. It's Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. PGA Championships in progress. All the names you would expect at the top of the leaderboard, like, you know, Matt Wallace and Keith Mitchell and Eric Van Ruin and Jimmy Walker and Kelly Kraft and, you know, guys like that.
Mm-hmm. All the ones that you know.
Yeah. Charlie Hoffman actually leads. He's 2 under. Through 5. Brooks Koepka, still 1 under. I have no idea what Tiger's up to. He double bogeyed 1, so I don't know. Maybe he's still...
He's still plus 2. Yeah, he parred 11 and parred 12.
Okay. So started on the back for Tiger Woods. I think coverage of that starts early. You know, it's not like the Masters where they...
I think it's either noon or 11 today.
Yeah. I think on TNT, too. Which is a little different.
Right.
But last night I just happened to be watching, you know, my Milwaukee Bucks
beat the
Toronto Raptors. Mm-hmm. And they were running some ads for the PGA Championship. So pretty cool there. We talked about Guarantano going to the Manning Passing Academy and some of the other quarterbacks that are there. I mean, there's a few guys that, you know, no one's ever really heard of. I don't know how they get picked for these things, but there's also kind of a who's who types of guys as well. I mean, Trevor Lawrence is going to be there. He was the first name that kind of jumped off the page. For me, there's other SEC guys in addition to Guarantano, like Joe Burrow of LSU, Jake Bentley, South Carolina, Jake Fromm, Georgia, Ben Hicks from Arkansas, Matt Corral or Coral, I don't know how you say that guy's name, Ole Miss. So there's a lot of SEC guys at the Passing Academy, and it's the Manning, so that kind of makes sense. I mean, it's kind of an SEC family no matter which way you slice it. And then just looking for some other notables, JT Daniels, that was a, you know, really highly touted recruit. He's at Southern Cal. He'll be there. Bryce Perkins from Virginia, I remember him a little bit. KJ Costello, the guy that forced the transfer from Keller Chris, who came here. KJ Costello of Stanford, of course, will be there as well. Ian Book of Notre Dame, and Brett Rodriguez, Arizona. Justin Herbert from Oregon, that's a big-time name. Tommy Stevens, Penn State. But then you've got some guys from like Abilene Christian, Colgate, you know, Bowling Green, some of those guys too. Valdosta State. Yeah.
Felipe Franks going?
I do not see Felipe Franks, although they do have some coming soon slots still available, it looks like.
Hmm.
Does it expand every year? I feel like there's a lot of guys. Like that's
a big camp. They need like, counselors.
Like 24 guys right now on their brochure with space for at least 12 more. So I don't know. Guarantano has to be, like, I don't know how to ask this question, but, like, you mentioned Crompton earlier and his kind of makeover with a new coach. It's Jim Chaney now working with Jarrett Guarantano. What's weird is the numbers for Guarantano aren't that bad. Did you see his adjusted completion percentage by Pro Football Focus recently? He's like fourth in the conference. It's like his normal completion percentage was middle of the pack or lower. His adjusted was right. He was behind Jake Fromm, who he was actually ahead of in whatever that other, in the grading scale.
Mm-hmm. What all does that take out? Drops and throwaways?
It takes, yeah, yeah. It doesn't count the throwaways, and it counts true drops as completions.
He did have a lot of drops. I mean, a lot. I think he probably had a lot of throwaways, too. True throwaways.
I feel like his completion percentage actually helped because he holds on to the ball probably too much and didn't throw it as much as some of the other guys. So, I mean, those are the places I feel like he's got to improve. Like, he needs to – we need to be getting off more passes here because, A, you're getting more first downs, and, B, he's checking it down to guys that are open for four-yard gains instead of sacks.
The beauty of Chaney is he's going to do what works.
Right.
Like last year, we talked about Fromm. He didn't have that many attempts because in certain games, he didn't need to throw the ball more than 6, 7, 8, 9 times. So if the run game's working and your defense is playing well, he's going to just kind of keep doing what works to win. Whereas you go back and look at what he did at Tennessee with Tyler Bray, and you're throwing it 30, 40 times a game. So I think for him, it's going to be situational. But within any framework of a given game, yeah, like it's imperative that Jim Chaney figure out what Garantano does best and highlight that. And that's the beauty of Jim Chaney and having him as opposed to, you know, a first-year coordinator full-time in Tyson Helton, a tight ends coach in Larry Scott with a running backs coach who had not been very good as the quarterbacks coach or a GA as the quarterback. Like, now he's got a designated quarterbacks coach. He's got an offensive coordinator with conference experience, with big-time Power 5 college football experience in different conferences. Like, I don't know what the best is, but I do feel like this would be the year where we see, so far at least, the best of Jarrett Garantano. And the adjusted numbers, I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe we're not putting enough stock in the fact that he's been in so many different systems with different coaches and everything. Maybe we're not putting enough in that. Maybe we're putting too much in that, and we're expecting too much from him this year. I don't really know. All I do know is that Jim Chaney is the guy that I want working with him based on everything else. I mean, I don't know how good Chris Winkie is as a quarterback's coach, but I feel like however good or bad he is, Jim Chaney being there fixes that if it's an issue. Like, having Jim Chaney, it really doesn't matter who the quarterback's coach is, in my opinion. He likes working with quarterbacks. That's who he wants to work with as far as a position group. So now, not only is Jarrett Garantano being coached by someone who played the position at both the college and NFL level in Chris Winkie with a designated coach, you've also got the added benefit of the offensive coordinator wanting to coach quarterbacks. Like, if there was ever a year where you would expect Jarrett Garantano to make the biggest jump going from no quarterback's coach to kind of a quarterback's coach to now two quarterback coaches, you would think this would be the year where at least him and what he can control, we would see the best version of that.
I would think so also. I mean, and some quarterbacks struggle when they have to go through a bunch of changes. I hope Garantano's the opposite of that, where some quarterbacks, as they get, especially in college, they're maturing as a person. I mean, think about your first year of college. I mean, I don't know about you. I was a pretty good kid, but pretty much also kind of an idiot on some things too. You know, I hope as he's maturing as a person, he's also maturing as a player and actually seeing different verbiage from different systems. You know, kind of that stuff is able to click and kind of come together for Garantano. And obviously, he'll be a huge key to how the offense operates. Maybe the biggest key again this season, with how quickly the offense can operate the way Jim Chaney wants it to do. Did you see where the I mean, I know it's only May 16th, but start to get excited when I see things like the Saturday Night Football graphic from ABC Houston.
I did not see it.
I want to see a Power T on that coming up in, you know, some
probably not this year.
A couple years. I don't know. Maybe the Oklahoma game. Maybe
that'll be
maybe
ABC.
Maybe we're back by then, at least to some level of like, oh, can Tennessee challenge Oklahoma, that sort of thing. But, yeah, Saturday Night Football on ABC is set for weeks 1, 2, and 3. And August the 31st, 7:30 game from Arlington, Texas, neutral site game, Auburn and Oregon. Kind of a weird matchup.
Rematch of the national championship game from a few years back.
That's the game where the Auburn player...
Yeah, Michael Dyer. Fell down, put the hand down, didn't actually go down, got up and ran, they kick a field goal and win.
Auburn, Oregon. So, I mean, that's to me, that's a very intriguing matchup. We'll get to see an SEC team play that we don't face this year. Kind of in a no-pressure, but hopefully fun watch there. Week two, and this is the one I'm most excited about between all these three, LSU at Texas. Talk about a big time.
I don't think
crossover.
I realized that Auburn and Oregon and now LSU. I don't think I realized those games were on the schedule.
It's pretty sweet.
Those are very interesting out of conference games. Auburn always typically plays a really good one.
Yeah,
and they're at Oregon.
No, it's Arlington, Texas.
Oh, neutral. That's right. That's right.
Neutral side.
Okay, I would much rather that game be at one of those two teams' actual stadium, but I'll take it. I'll take that.
LSU is at Texas. I mean, talk about a hostile environment. Night game.
Is Texas back? Can LSU take the next step and be a real team for the national title?
Both those quarterbacks are back too, right? I mean, that Texas kid was pretty young, and Joe Burrow, of course, is back for LSU. So I always like early season games where the quarterbacks return.
Yeah.
Because they seem to be cleaner games. The offenses are managed at least pretty well, typically, if you have a returning quarterback. So that'll be a fun one. That's week two, September the 7th. And don't these games have they moved the kickoff time? I mean, it says 7:30 on here. It could just mean that they want you to tune in for the whatever they call that pregame, the shift or whatever they put a name on it for the sponsor.
Yeah.
But it seems like those used to say 8 o'clock. If it's 30 minutes earlier, I'm for that as well. And then week three is actually a conference game, but it's Clemson at Syracuse, which
look out.
I mean,
that's been a trip up game for Clemson the last 2 years. They won this year, but that was the game Trevor Lawrence got hurt, and then obviously last year they lost when Kelly Bryant got hurt in that game, and they lost at Syracuse. Look out!
Yeah, so
look
that's
out. The Orange. They might have a little something for Clemson. Dino Babers got it figured out, man. Legit.
And it's always fun to watch. One of the top teams in college football go on the road in conference, I think, like in a night game like that, because it's just crazy. And some of those games quickly get out of hand for the road team, and they dominate. But we know others, sometimes weird stuff starts happening, and that obviously profiles as one of those. Of course, the season will start a whole week earlier than that, August 24th. ESPN.
If Florida has enough players to field the team by then.
7 o'clock kickoff. I guess this is set because ESPN's got the time on here. 7 o'clock ESPN, Saturday, August 24th. Florida and Miami playing in Orlando. Neutral site game, but in the state there. And then you also have Arizona at Hawaii playing later that night on CBS Sports Network. Can't wait. Not that far away.
Week four has Notre Dame going to Georgia and Michigan going to Wisconsin.
So a lot of people were already talking about that Notre Dame game. Notre Dame, Georgia.
Notre Dame, Georgia would be a good one.
The ABC game for week four.
What was the Wisconsin one?
Michigan going to Wisconsin.
Yeah, we'll see. Wisconsin's always so boring to watch. Just like their basketball team.
Yeah.
They're the most boring, good athletic department in the world.
Yeah. A lot of teams are opening. Seems like there's more Thursday night games, too, that the Thursday leading into the Saturday when Tennessee opens their season. Utah's playing BYU at Thursday night. You want to do a little scouting ahead of time. I mean, that's only like a week and a half ahead of.
That would be good to watch BYU against somebody worth a damn, too.
Yeah, 2.5 weeks before you play them. Yeah, I mean, Utah, Pac-12 team. So you'll be able to see that when Georgia Tech and Clemson are going at it on that Thursday night in a conference game. Start their season. So, there's even some Friday night games, too.
Look out.
Look out. We'll come back. Final segment of the program right back at you here on Fan Run Radio. Final segment of the program. I mean, it is Thursday. We talked a lot about it on, what was that, Tuesday? No, it was Monday, right?
Monday.
Yeah.
We couldn't wait this week.
We couldn't. But a little follow-up, some Thrones Thursday for you here. Final segment on Three and Out. I read a just fantastic article on the LA Times by Mary McNamara. And I thought it was more powerful because it was written by a female, because you got these female commenters, I don't even know, like, really, really complaining about Daenerys's character development and arc and ultimate ending here, saying like, oh, you can't even have a female be the star, whatever, without going crazy, huh? You know, like, this is so, you know,
yeah,
chauvinistic.
It's not like Arya Stark is a girl,
right? I mean, it's completely,
it's a really
ridiculous
bad take.
It's a lot of, I mean, I think it's a lot of people that never even cared about this show until it became so
right.
big, and now they're kind of getting a taste of it for the first time. And it's like the whole, one of the things that makes this show so great is because it's complete fantasy in terms of the world. But in terms of how the characters are, it's very much real life, in that we are all flawed human beings. Like, none of us are perfect, and in the show, no character is perfect. Like, even the most honorable character in season one suffers and creates turmoil and chaos for his own family because he's almost too honorable. I mean, it's more real life than a lot of real life shows, if that makes sense. And McNamara, her piece was titled "The Anger of Game of Thrones Fans is Part of the Game." And in the tweet where she put it out, she also said, "And Daenerys isn't crazy." And she kind of goes through parts of the whole, like, Daenerys story. I mean, first of all, like, Daenerys hasn't been some angel throughout the show.
No, I mean, people have now gone back, and every season you see at least one big thing that she does where this side of her, and I mean, granted, she's not necessarily burning down King's Landing, but she's done something, and I guess they've gotten progressively, you know, more dramatic every single season. Like, when she watched her, I mean, it goes back to when she watched her brother get killed when they poured the gold on his head, and she just kind of sat there like, yeah, well, you're out of the picture
he
now.
He deserved it, yeah. I mean,
and then, it, you know, she crucified the masters. She burned Samwell's family. I mean, there's always something where she has a choice, and it is a choice, and she kind of chooses the make a statement side of the coin. Forgive the side of the coin pun back to the final episode there, but this is, you could see her weighing it as she sat on that dragon, and then she just decided, yep, burning it down.
Here's the part McNamara writes I think is just so good. Daenerys has been very clear about her goals throughout the show. She came to Westeros to attack King's Landing and take the Iron Throne. She has repeatedly said she will burn cities to the ground to do this. Jon convinced her to put a pin in that and go north to fight the White Walkers, which, unlike Cersei, she did at great personal and political cost. And she hung in there even after Jon told her, with the worst possible timing ever, that he had a better claim to the throne than she, and also they are related. Daenerys lost one dragon, saving Jon, and then half her army, saving Winterfell. She knows that without her dragons, there's no way Arya would have survived to kill the Night King. And what does she get? No celebration of her role, little respect as a queen, continual side-eye from Sansa, and a lot of foot-dragging from her supposed allies when it comes time to return the favor. On the way back from the north, where she never planned to go in the first place, she loses another dragon, her best friend, and her fleet. One of her advisors starts plotting against her, and suddenly all the people who were so happy to use her firepower when they needed it are wondering if having a queen with a dragon is really such a good idea. To add insult to injury, Jon decides that their relationship should really just be professional, and Tyrion, who has been giving her terrible advice and literally defying her wishes, keeps telling her to calm down. Instead, she decides to do, and I'd forgotten about this, what Elena Tyrell told her to do before everything got crazy. Ignore the men and be the mother of dragons. Which is not at all the same as going crazy. It's pretty good. I'd forgotten about Elena saying, hey, don't listen to the guys with the, you know, with a member. Like, just be the mother of dragons. Be the killer. if this shocked you, like, you're not a real Game of Thrones fan. Like, you don't have to agree with it. You don't even have to like it. But if this shocked you that one of the good guys was going to do some things that weren't good, like,
I mean,
sorry.
Yeah, no one who's sat on the throne in this entire show has been, quote, good.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I mean,
right. Yeah.
Like, that's kind of, I think that's kind of the thing, is, like, once you get to a point where that power is attainable, you turn bad to get it. I mean, like, that's just the way it has gone. Mm-hmm. Like, Robert Baratheon, he killed the previous king to get the throne, did he not?
Well, Jaime did. And
that's right, Jaime did, yeah.
Robert and Ned, basically, either one could have had it. Ned let Robert have it.
Yeah, and then, I mean, we saw what happened to Joffrey when he got the throne,
mm-hmm.
right? And then maybe little Tommen. Was that it?
Tommen,
yeah. He was the one guy. He was like, this is too much for me. I am not bad enough to be on this throne. He threw himself out of a window.
Spoiler
to not
alert.
To not go bad. Well, that's like three seasons ago.
I know.
Cersei on the throne, she hasn't exactly been good. She's been pretty cruddy. And so, yeah, Daenerys gets it in her sights, and then she's doing what everybody else does when they get the throne and can taste it. She gets the crazy eyes. But yeah, this was not new. Like, we saw this coming.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that's unlimited power with the dragon.
We can...
We maybe need to talk about this tomorrow. There's a really good article on Barstool. All the actors hate the last season. Like, everyone who's died or had a weird character change is just furious that this is what happened. So,
yeah.
The actors and actresses are kind of with some of the people who are disappointed with the season.
That makes it even better. I mean, how else should this go out? We'll talk a little bit more about that and, of course, all the major sports topics on the program tomorrow. Tune back in then at 7. Talk Sports is next right here on Fan Run Radio.